1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Court adjourned for the day in the hush money trial case of Donald Trump. He was back in court in New York while the Supreme Court heard arguments in the federal election interference case and whether Trump should have presidential immunity from criminal prosecution. Trump's top advisors also now facing new allegations in Michigan and Arizona, centered on efforts to overturn the 2020 election in those states. ABC's Aaron Katursky has more.
The former president, as an unindicted co-conspirator, isn't going to face any charges here, but the indictment in Arizona says that he was part of this scheme to keep him in office, even though Joe Biden won Arizona in 2020.
In California, USC officials canceling the main graduation ceremony due to recent pro-Palestinian protests where demonstrators have clashed with police. It's among dozens of campuses dealing with protests over the Israel-Hamas war. And jobless claims fell to the lowest level in 9 weeks. 5,000 fewer Americans filed for first-time claims compared to last week. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Local leaders say they're surprised by the Universities of Wisconsin decision to pull out of its Richland Center campus on July 1st. State Representative Katrina Shankland is on the Assembly's Colleges and Universities Committee.
Five total, five two-year campuses in a year. That's not okay. We should not accept it. And I am not seeing a statewide conversation like I would like.
Shankland speaking at a forum in Muscadet Tuesday. The disgraced former chancellor at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse confirms that interim chancellor Betsy Morgan is moving to have him fired. The UW Board of Regents removed Gao as chancellor in December for making online pornographic videos. Since then, he's been on paid leave as a tenured faculty member. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. A 37-year-old Marinette County man will spend 12 years in prison for soliciting sexually explicit images of a child. David Johnson was sentenced Wednesday in federal court. Officials say he used online platforms and apps to converse with minors in Florida and Ohio, asking them to share explicit photos and sending them pictures of himself. Johnson will be on 15 years extended supervision following his release and will be required to register as a sex offender. De Pere is a growing city that still tries to honor its past. Mayor Jim Boyd.
We always try to preserve, but there are times it just doesn't work. Yeah, and right. Things have to come down. And then you just try to make it work and try to fit in the environment. So we always tell people we try to preserve the best we can, but, you know, and you encourage developers to come in, and sometimes they say it just can't happen.
Boyd says that this means that there's a mix of buildings in De Pere, but you still get that old town feel from the city. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WGBW News.
The NFL Draft tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The draft is in Detroit, runs tonight through all day Saturday. Next year, the draft will be held here in Green Bay. I asked GM Brian Gutekunst what makes his scouting department unique.
We've had a long-term process here for a long time that has not only had success here, but it's had success other places. You know, whether it goes back to Ron and Ted and, you know, putting that effort in.
The Chicago Bears unveiling a plan to build a new indoor stadium on the lakefront, not in the suburbs in Arlington. The catch is they want Illinois taxpayers to split the cost, estimated to be $4.6 billion. Baseball, the Brewers win 7-5 today over the Pirates. Milwaukee taking 2 out of 4 games in Pittsburgh. Last night in Pittsburgh, they held on to beat the Pirates 3-2. Bryce Wilson lasted until early in the fifth inning. How'd he look?
Bryce wasn't sharp. He'll be the first to tell you. Yeah, he hung in there and battled. Last inning he gave us, the fifth, was really, really important.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, increasing clouds, a chance of showers in the late afternoon, highs upper 50s and becoming windy. On and off showers and thunderstorms Friday night into Saturday, highs in the mid-70s and breezy, more rain possible Sunday. Currently 57 degrees.
DevilRadioSwag.com. You've asked for it for over a decade. We've finally gotten off our dead and responded. DevilRadioSwag.com. T-shirt and Dom's favorite slimming black, white, or gray. DevilRadioSwag.com. Crew necks, hoodies, coffee mugs, exclusive merchandise of the greatest radio show ever. Only at the DevilRadioSwag.com, because we got bills too.
The Wisconsin Grassroots Network's 15th Annual Festival is coming Saturday, May 4th at Lawrence University in Appleton. The festival encourages networking and is an ideal place for connecting with citizens who are looking to get involved. Attendees from all over Wisconsin will meet progressive community organizations who share values such as democracy, justice, equality, and the environment. There'll be nationally recognized speakers, breakout sessions, tabling, bands, and Garrison Keillor. For more information, go online to wigrassrootsnetwork.com.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we'll do some recombobulating with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, then all things entertainment with Matt Miller. Make sure you join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Thursday show for the ages, a happier, happy hour. And Dom, I promise this might be our most litigious show ever. We got a fine former U.S. attorney and a friend of ours. He is James Santel. He is the host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11. Tune him in for all the coverage. But, Jim, we appreciate you making time for us today. I woke up happy this morning, Jim. I knew.
Jim. Because you like litigation. Isn't that right, Mike?
I knew it would be a target-rich environment for conversation on the radio airwaves with you, and I appreciate you joining us. Jim, let's start with the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes.
The question of presidential immunity. And I thought it was going well for democracy, small d democracy. I thought, you know, the question was sort of being put aside. Hell, even Amy Coney Barrett sort of went through the official acts and the private acts that a president could undertake and got concession from his lawyer, Sauer, basically that damn near every one of the things enumerated by Jack Smith as crimes would fall under the header of private actions. So why isn't a case closed? See you in court, Mr. Trump?
The answer is it should be closed, and this should have been resolved months ago, as we have talked on this wonderful broadcast. The Supreme Court today obviously addressing this issue by the former president that he has blanket immunity for anything and everything that he does inside and outside the ambit of his official duties, his private duties. It's all covered. That's his position. And, of course, that's ridiculous. That's an absurd proposition. It is not consistent with our Constitution, and it's not consistent with anything that courts have said in the past. All of this goes to this larger issue of whether or not we're going to hold a president responsible for his criminal acts, whether we have kings in America or we have presidents in America. That's what the lower courts have found. Judge Chutkan found that. The Court of Appeals found that. And this case should have, frankly, been resolved a long, long time ago. It appears, consistent with your observations, Mike, Supreme Court is not going to grant blanket immunity here, but I am troubled. I am troubled by the fact that they are seemingly parsing out this notion of private acts, public acts, official acts, and especially when you focus upon the allegations as Michael Dreeben did, he is representing the Solicitor General in this matter, focusing on these particular charges. They are crimes. They are crimes. And for that reason, this distinction that the Supreme Court seems to be heading in the direction of, at least the majority, of dividing somehow this indictment up, that's very troubling. That's very troubling. A crime for these purposes is a crime. And even if you are inside some official capacity, you cannot violate the law. And that's the point.
And Jim, it was very strange. Every time the lawyer for the DOJ tried to bring the conversation to the specifics of, yes, of the trial before the bench, Alito kept waving, I want to talk about hypotheticals. We're trying to, I think Gorsuch said, you know, we're trying to write a decision for the ages. And I'm like, this is the same court that completely sets aside stare decisis and prior precedent. But anyways, your thoughts, Counselor.
Right. And if we're writing for the ages, then we can make a very simple point, which once again is presidents are not immune for criminal acts that they engage in while they're in the White House. And candidly, they're not immune from other things outside of the White House as well. That can be the fundamental, very simple notion. To your good observation, once again, my initial thought about what was going on today was, well, the Supreme Court scheduled this on. They need to attach some academic legitimacy to this. They need to heighten somehow this truly, truly frivolous, unsubstantiated claim, bootstrap it into something that sounds better. So we're going to pose all of these hypotheticals about the next case, about other things that are out there, all these other things that frankly do not go to this particular prosecution. And along the way, send the unimportant message, frankly important message, but unimportant position, that somehow we're talking about something about which reasonable people can differ. We are not. Anybody turning into that exchange today would think, well, gee, reasonable people could differ on this. The answer is no, they cannot. And all of this I would offer, from Alito and Kavanaugh and to others to some extent, is all window dressing to make this, again, this argument that has no close, if you will, to make it more legitimate and to make it sound as if there's a legitimate argument in the opposite direction. There is not. They need to come forward. And I've said this before, I will say it again on this show, as I've said before, they need to come forward and deny the notion under these circumstances that there is a presidential immunity doctrine out there for crimes committed. And oh, by the way, the other troubling part of this, assuming that they come down in some iteration of that, we plainly have at least a couple of Supreme Court justices who may go in the opposite direction or may say some things that again suggest that indeed the Constitution is not what it says. That is equally troubling. If the Supreme Court does not come forward, whether it's next week or probably more likely in June, and say with unanimity, 9 of them, that there's no such thing as criminal immunity for a president who's committing crimes in the Oval Office as the president, official or private, unless they say that, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. And that's the fear that I came out of from this morning's oral argument.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus here on the Civic Media Network. Jim, retired conservative appellate judge Michael Luttig had a comment today, you know, lamenting the fact that they talked around the one question. And I did tune in, and it was hard because I was doing other things, but I wanted to get a sense of how it was and the questions and the tone of it all. And it seems like, my goodness, we're getting in the weeds here. You know, this is we're getting way too far in. And here's what Luttig had to say. The question that was not answered is whether a former president of the United States may be prosecuted for attempting to remain in power, notwithstanding the election of his successor by the American people, thereby also depriving his lawfully elected successor of the powers of the presidency to which that successor became entitled upon his rightful election by the American people, and preventing the peaceful transfer of power for the first time in American history. I mean, I don't get all the hypotheticals. I mean, and some of the questions talking about who's, I mean, this is why we're here. This is the point. Did you get any sense of satisfaction at the end of this thing today, Jim?
I did not, for that very reason. Judge Luttig's got it just right. This should have been, maybe you let counsel for Donald Trump make his presentation And then you go to Michael Dreeben, who, by the way, is superb in so many ways in responding to these out there questions from the Supreme Court. But what you do is, all right, we've got nothing more to say. Let's not have a three-hour oral argument on this issue. It is just as narrow as you just indicated, Dom. Judge Ludwig's got it just right. That's the issue. And if you've got some other issues down the road about the next president and some other charges, whether they're criminal, civil down the road, we know already that presidents are not civilly immune from prosecution. We've seen that before. Bill Clinton, John Paul Stevens has said this with respect to other presidents. We know that issue is out there. Here, all you need to do is say presidents are not above the law. Judge Ludwig's got it just right. And there is nothing to prevent this criminal prosecution on these facts, on these allegations in this grand jury indictment from going forward. Do not try to parse this into something more significant than that. It's interesting. I thought it was a law school class in many ways. I thought it was actually Michael Dreeben, again, who I think is brilliant, tutoring the members of the Supreme Court. They thought they had all sorts of wonderful questions. And he not only had responses, but basically put them in their places when it came to the contest, if you will, about the specifics that they were raising. This was Michael, this was Michael Dreeben's class today. He did a wonderful job. It's unfortunate that he had to do this at the length that he did. This should have been done in 15 minutes, and we should have anticipated a decision. Right now, we're going to get something much messier in June.
Jim, with regards to the Justice Amy Coney Barrett, getting the Trump attorney to acknowledge the very specific issues, many that she read directly from the prosecutor's filings, that these, in fact, were, you know, personal acts, essentially. I'm not clear on the scope of all of the details of the indictment, but couldn't Jack Smith just drop all the other ones and go with the ones that they already said, yep, that was personal, in the interest of time being of the essence?
Sure, he certainly could. And Amy Coney Barrett, following up on precisely the exchange that you're identifying right now, Dom, said just that. She said, "Why, you know, why can't we divide this up? You go ahead, we'll send it back, try those counts and or try those aspects, if you will." And this is the other problem with that notion. We've got four counts here, and they allege conspiracies, and they also obviously allege under Section 1512 these other issues related to obstruction. And what Michael Dreeben was saying, the problem with that is that all four counts kind of pass between, and I hate to even say the distinction here, private and public, official and private. There's no such thing. But Michael Dreeben calls this an integrated conspiracy. And what he is saying is you can't parse these out. It sounds like a good idea. Send them back. Let Judge Chutkan have some hearings about this. And she figures it out. District court judges are not going to take these four, frankly, very straightforward, direct counts and say, well, I'm going to parse out this language, that language. She can make limitations on the evidence, but that's not the kind of thing you do. And all this question about this mixed case, official and unofficial, personal, it just doesn't reflect what's really going on here. Michael Dreeben was right to say this is an integrated conspiracy. It partakes of things you're doing in your official capacity, things you're doing probably in your private capacity. In the end, those distinctions do not make a difference. And that was his very compelling point.
Well, you make very compelling points. We appreciate you coming around, and we hope you stick around more with our good friend, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. He is the host of Amicus, a law review on Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11. Look it up. Let me make sure I got that right. A law review.
That's
Amicus,
correct.
A law review. More Jim Santel and the Devil's Advocates.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
Pumping your tires, checking your brakes. Part of the list to get your bicycle rider ready. But don't forget to ride safe, too. Here's Green Bay biking expert Peter Flukie.
But what we forget about is that there are people out there walking, there are people out there biking. But because we didn't say to ourselves, where are those folks? You need to be looking and searching for those because it's a shared responsibility.
Flukie says responsibility includes obeying the rules of the road. But did you know bikes are equal to anything else on the road? It's true. By the way, the Green Bay area earned a bronze level, which is basically third place for being a bike-friendly community. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr. Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever-changing, and all of us with civic media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather-ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
A weather radio should be considered an important piece of your family's safety plan. It's an automated 24-hour emergency source, which is a reliable way to receive weather alerts and information about a storm, tornado, or flood in your area. And if you lose power, these radios have a battery backup. NOAA Weather Radio All Hazards Awareness Day is Wednesday, May 1st. As a Weather Ready ambassador, I suggest taking time to learn how these radios work, whether you are inside or out on your boat or camping. The Wisconsin Emergency Management website is a great place to start. Go to wem.wi.gov. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for the Todd Allball Show.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Our friend and colleague, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, airing here on the Civic Media Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Central. Check it out. Jim, thank you for sticking around.
Good to be with you as always, gentlemen.
Jim, I digress for just a minute because I got called out for something we talked about on the air yesterday. Sue Opper, who is the district attorney of Waukesha County, and Jim, I know you were a federal prosecutor, but we put forth our opinion yesterday that Opper should have considered charging Janelle Branchon because there are all these existing tapes that could be used as evidence, at least shows intent. We know what she's thinking because we've heard the tapes, or at least the prosecutor has. Jim, this nice lady, I think I'm going to call her Meg. Meg said, we got it absolutely wrong. First and foremost, she commends. She is a retired assistant attorney general, district attorney, pardon me, for the state of Wisconsin. She commends Opper and says, I've known her for 30 years. And she says, effectively, we've got it completely wrong on the whole evidentiary thing. And I want to ask your opinion, counselor. Recorded tapes, one side consents, the other side does not know. Can those be used in a criminal prosecution in the state of Wisconsin, to your opinion, counselor?
Right. And so these issues, again, they loom large. And I won't go down the road of commenting upon the credibility or the history of a particular district attorney because we're focusing upon the particular decision that DA Hopper is making here. And when I look at the letter that she has written, I do not see it as a document that's disingenuous. She plainly is wrestling with these evidentiary concerns about the use of the tapes here. At the same time, my response on this is that you plainly have more than an indication. You probably have probable cause that indeed there's some criminal activity here. And the question that I do not know about, and I should pause sort of right in the middle of this and say, I very seldom second guess prosecutors, not because they're in the scope of my family, if you will, they're not, but just because there may be some things in the file that I do not know about that may not be in the public domain. But that leads me to the point, which is just this. It struck me that Susan Opper's letter was focused exclusively upon these tapes. And I always think about two things. One is, what is the interest of the community? And if there is an interest in the community in addressing what appear to be, again, putting the evidentiary issues to one side, criminal conduct, then the question is there a way to present this in court? Now, Susan Opera has appropriately said, well, wait a minute, we've got this consent issue. A judge would certainly not permit that to go forward. And the question there is giving it a try, if you will, giving a shot and saying, yes, indeed, we understand that there are some of those prohibitions here. There are often exceptions to those kinds of evidentiary rules. All kinds of things can be raised in front of the judge as to those particular tapes, which leads me to the second and larger issue that I responded to, I thought about when I read the letter. Again, I do not attack the letter. I think as far as it goes, it's just fine. But the question is, all right, you've got this reason to believe that there are these conversations. Let's assume they would not come in at trial. Are there other sources of that same information that you can possibly present to a charging official, the DA? Are there other things that you could present that do not rely centrally upon that? I was stricken that the letter focuses so much upon that evidentiary aspect and not addressing the larger issue of a crime having been committed here and whether there's an alternative means of getting it in, and frankly, giving up on the notion that there is no way that a judge would ever permit any of these into evidence. I recognize what Wisconsin says about those kinds of things. Many times in my career, attempts to try to do justice by asking the judge, finding a legitimate, credible theory to move things in, to get things in under an evidence code. Again, I will add quickly, I do not know all the ins and outs of the case, but it strikes me that there are some things that were missing from that letter.
Okay. From my new friend Meg's email to me, and I want to make sure we address this because we don't want to get it wrong. She writes, like all prosecutors, charging a case is based solely on the facts and your ability to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. You are dead wrong about what the role of a prosecutor is. It is not to bring cases in which you know in advance that a key piece of evidence will not be allowed at trial, and any evidence that comes from that piece of evidence could be excluded based on the fruit of the poison tree rule of evidence. So does the prosecutor have to have a guaranteed ironclad case each and every time? Because I feel like that's the way perhaps our attorney general is thinking with these fake electors.
Right.
You know, that's what an indictment's for. That's what the grand jury is to decide. Am I totally wrong on this, Jim?
No. And again, what you just read, I would embrace that to some extent. That is, yes, indeed. If you know that the whole core of your case, virtually everything, 98% of it, is not going to be admitted into the record and under the evidence code, then you've got a problem. But once again, the issue is, are there other mechanisms perhaps that are out there that you may be able to pursue? And your purpose in the end is to do justice. And in these circumstances, it strikes me that you can do both of those things, that you can abide by the evidence code, but also explore those opportunities. I find the letter, as I say, too narrow in terms of its approach. And many times in my career, other circumstances, I can remember cases where, you know what, we're not sure if the evidence is going to come in, but we know something terrible, something criminal happened here, and we're willing to go into a courtroom and make a credible, not a frivolous, but a credible argument to a judge about why this particular bit of evidence should be admitted. And that happens all the time. And that's the discretion that prosecutors have. And that's what I think is missing from the otherwise fairly good and direct comment from your listener there.
Well, some of the other prosecutors around the state said, we're personally conflicted because we're members of the Republican parties that are alleged to have been part of this conspiracy. Jim, ultimately, the Wisconsin Ethics Commission said 60 days for local prosecutors, then we'll move on up the ladder, perhaps the State Department of Justice. That means Josh Call. He has not moved with alacrity on the fake electors issue. Would Josh give us any indication if he was moving forward, or would it just be, you know, silence because you don't comment on an open investigation?
And again, on that issue, on the fake electors issue, I'll offer just this additional insight, which is, yes, there's a standard approach on Department of Justice. You don't comment on pending investigations, except when there's a public interest in knowing about them. And that's why the fake electors, he can, in fact, confirm or deny. He doesn't have to tell us all the details, whether there's an investigation going on. As to this matter, again, public interest could also do that.
Inquiring minds want to know. Come back, more James Santel, more Devil's Advocates, a happier happy hour.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. $36 million for opioid treatment in Wisconsin is being held up by one anonymous state lawmaker. The unnamed legislator is a member of the powerful Joint Finance Committee. They filed an objection to the Department of Health Services plan to spend the money. The money comes from a court settlement with four drug makers. Wisconsin high school athletes will have to wait to cash in on name, image, and likeness opportunities. Tara Rose of St. Croix Falls was one of a majority of local athletic directors who voted the idea down on Wednesday.
I do not feel equipped as an athletic director to help my student athletes and my parents navigate this rule accurately.
31 states allow college-style NIL at the high school level, including Minnesota and Illinois. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Lisa Hale. We're still under an elevated risk of wildfires today. The U.S. National Weather Service reminds people to use caution while grilling or using equipment that can cause a spark. You should avoid burning anything outside today. We'll have warm temperatures, wind, and relatively low humidity. These conditions are favorable for the spread of fires. Our entire listening area is either under a high or very high risk of fire danger. As the state continues to celebrate Earth Week, Governor Tony Evers announced Wisconsin is receiving a grant of $62.4 million from the Biden-Harris administration to help fund solar systems for low and moderate income households in Wisconsin. The average cost for a 5-kilowatt rooftop system is between $14,000 and $19,000 before federal tax credits and incentives. And that's what you need to know. I'm Lisa Hale, WGBW News.
I'm Pete with the 60-second Showbiz Beat. Tom Brady will make $375 million as an analyst over 10 years. I'm not trying to denigrate a profession, but $37.5 million a year to say, great catch? I would have done it for half that. The legendary QB will be the subject of a comedy roast on Netflix May 5th. That's right, they're going to roast a handsome 7-time Super Bowl champion who married a supermodel and seems to be liked by everyone, despite his past friendship with Donald Trump. Good luck, writers. The feud between Taylor Swift and Kim Kardashian is back in the news. Swift released a song called Thank You, Amy, which references a bully. Swifty fans suspect the song is directed at Kardashian, whose ex-husband, Kanye West, said derogatory things about Swift in 2016, which Kardashian still defends to this day. Taylor Swift is not ready to shake it off and came out swinging through song. In a related story, Kardashian will retaliate with a new sex tape. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, low in the mid-30s. For tomorrow, increasing clouds, a chance of showers in the late afternoon, highs upper 50s and becoming windy. On and off showers and thunderstorms Friday night into Saturday, highs in the mid-70s and breezy, more rain possible Sunday. Currently 57 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
State Senator Keldo Royce in Richland County. UW System made the unilateral decision to completely vacate the campus by July 1st of this year.
It's so short-sighted to think it costs a little bit more money to run it and there aren't as many students, so let's just shut it down. A smart business owner would say now is the time to invest because we know every person that comes through the door, you're going to get 40-fold the investment from how they're going to be able to give back to our state.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On my next show, I welcome brewery owner and classically trained singer Kirk Bangstad and singer Brentley Brehm and host of Civic Media's Max Inc., Terry Barr.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
Think you know politics? Think again. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates.
What you are? Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, a Thursday show for the ages. rolling through a happier happy hour. We got a fine guest. He's stuck around. He is James Santel, former U.S. attorney. He's the host of Amicus, a law review Saturday mornings on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11. Apparently, Dom wants to jump in here, so I'll let him.
Jump in, yeah. Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Every two segments, man.
I do want to get back to the national news, certainly, but I want to kind of put a bow on some of the questions I had regarding this effort here in Wisconsin by State Representative Janelle Branch and other Republicans to circumvent state finance campaign limitations by pooling money to county parties and then purposely distributing them to the candidate of their choice. And this is regarding, of course, multiple 34 recordings, I understand, of which four were directly between the candidate Steen and current legislator Janelle Branch. The recording rules, Jim, one person, two people, three different options. Both people know that they're being recorded. One of the two people know they're being recorded, or nobody knows they're being recorded. What circumstances, how would that impact a criminal and or federal case?
Sure.
Criminal and or civil case, Jim.
Sure. And so again, as you indicated, every state is different when it comes to these consent rules, right? And plainly, the Wisconsin rule would have an impact. That's where you'd start in the state prosecution, even a federal prosecution. Defense counsel can come forward and say, under the state law, these tapes cannot come in, which again is the position of the district attorney here. And so you would argue about that plainly. And again, I do not mean to indicate those are not insignificant arguments. They are. But to the initial point of your question, even, as you describe the events themselves, the alleged activity, it strikes me, and this is putting a little bit more flesh on the bones of what we were chatting about before, that if the recordings themselves give you probable cause to open a file, to believe, even if they are not admissible, what other things are out there that you could also use to identify whether this is true or not? Are there other witnesses who may not be on tapes that may not be admissible? As you just described what you're saying here, Dom, what about, are there written records? Are there written notes? We're right now, there's a fellow testifying in a Manhattan courtroom about his contemporaneous notes that he's writing on a regular basis about conversations that are being had. What about financial transactions? If indeed any of this is related to money, are there bank statements? Are there checks? Are there other things? Are there ledgers? All those kinds of things that you can identify. And if in the end you find that that is not sufficient, even if you conclude that you can't get the tapes in, then you say, you know what, I don't have enough to go forward here. But it just strikes me that the letter itself was too narrow for my taste and did not in fact say, oh, by the way, or at least say, we've got these, we are investigating other options here. And for that reason, we're going to come back to you at some point. We're not going to tell you all the things we're doing as investigators and prosecutors, but we are going to explore this more. If in the end there is really no viable presentation that we can make that will survive motions to dismiss, motions to suppress, we'll let you know that. But just on the tapes alone, it strikes me that that is a little bit, that's too limiting, at least from my perspective, in the federal system.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Fine guest, James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours, host of Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Tune in. I often do at the cabin, Jim. I'm glad I get to take us to the New York courtroom. You helped me transition nicely, counselor. David Pecker, the prosecutors, the DA, leading with the former head of AMI, the mothership of the National Enquirer. And Jim Pecker, from my understanding, from the reporting, because I'm not inside the courtroom, obviously, but he basically laid out in testimony today that these payoffs, not just to Stormy Daniels, but a payoff to a former playmate, Karen McDougal, a payoff to the doorman at Trump Tower, and $180,000 later, Trump stiffed them. Mm-hmm. And then the conversation came up about paying off Stormy Daniels. But the unfortunately named David Pecker, Jim, he said this was about elections. Don't you think this is pretty damning stuff? It's a good lead witness, I think, from the prosecution.
Absolutely. A couple of very good things to unpack there. Number one, the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, and the folks who were there on his behalf in the courtroom identified this fellow. He is not a convicted criminal. Yes, a National Enquirer. We know all the baggage that may come with that. But nonetheless, this is a guy who not only can provide the interstitial relationships here, describe the history. I think it is fascinating, something that I did not know until his testimony these days and even the opening statement, that it was Donald Trump's own failures, as he always did, to pay his bills that prompted Pecker to say, you know what, I'm not going to front this money anymore. I'm not going to do this for Stormy Daniels. I did it before. I wasn't paid. And then Donald Trump again engages with Michael Flynn and makes this happen. I found that fascinating. The other piece of this that I also find fascinating, as I was just indicating in response to my conversation with Dom, this is a man who's also writing notes at the same time that all this is happening, and describing not only what is the history of this, but the transactions back and forth. Why is that also compelling? Well, the contemporaneous notes, these are not notes put together last week during the course of trial preparation. They're things that are committed to paper at the time that they're happening. They corroborate what Pecker is saying, as do the other financial records. Again, I think this is, I hesitate to say it's brilliant, maybe with a small b, it's brilliant to begin with him, because he provides the overall view of this, and he's not the kind of person that the jury is automatically going to dismiss as being incredible. We're probably going to see some of that when it comes to Michael Cohen. He will be sandwiched in the middle of this trial, and then we'll get more at the very end to kind of soften the blow, if you will, of Michael Cohen's baggage. But this is a strong start. And if anyone's watching this carefully, this is the kind of structure that you want to put in place for a jury. They already have the broad, not just the broad ambits of this. They've got the particulars as well. David Pecker was a very, and is a very compelling witness on behalf of this prosecution.
Jim Santel served the side story going on concurrently in this trial, the gag order, and the repeated apparent violations of the gag order. Before court today, it was alleged the former president broke the gag order four more times just over the last 3 days. Jim, at some point, the dam's going to break, and it's going to have to be worse than $1,000 a crack, because that's not going to be dissuasive to this guy. I mean, hell, he lost $5 million to E. Jean Carroll, and he ran out, and he did it at least two more times. So, Jim, here's my question. Do you put the guy's ass in jail in a holding cell, at least during the course of the day, so he can't be truthy socialing at the judge's daughter or whoever else the witnesses, you know, during every break in the action?
This is exactly, Mike, what we chatted about last Saturday on.
Oh, no. We'll assume Jim will pay the cable bill and be back in just a second. But isn't this interesting, Dom? Don't you?
A lot of you.
I'm sorry, Jim. We lost you there for a moment. I know you talked about it on your own show because I was tuned in from the cabin, but tell the audience that missed the big show last week.
Sure. And apologize again for the technology glitch here on my end. This is all about deterrence. If you want to stop this person, in this case, Donald Trump, any defendant, from behaving in a way that's contrary to the rules and the standards and the practices that apply to every other defendant in any other case, state or federal. And what you've done is you've told them what he can and cannot do. He continues to violate it. You do engage probably in some gradual discipline here. So yes, probably Judge Merchan is going to fine him a little bit, but fairly quickly, as I've advocated before, and I will do it again with you today, the possibility and the prospect, the likelihood of detention has got to be on the table. And can you do that? Absolutely, you can do it. At the end of every proceeding at 5:30, 6 o'clock, the local law enforcement, outside of the presence of the jury, takes the defendant to a previously identified spot, and you are detained overnight, not in a hotel room, but in a detention facility somewhere. You have access, yes, to your lawyers, to your family. You can get clothing. They'll feed you, all those kinds of things. You do not have your phone. And that, again, would be true of any defendant. And then the following morning, you can get up and shower and shave and you can come to court again. The jury will know nothing about this, but every single time you do it, again, we're now approaching, we're certainly in the teens now, every single time you do it, you get a night in detention. And that should be what Judge Mershon is going to do. That's huge news, I know, again, in the history of America. We've never done that before. But absent doing that, just the opposite will happen. If there are only fines that are imposed and nothing happens at all, what this could very well do is simply encourage more of it. And then we've got the paper tiger problem, right? The judge is telling me not to do this, but he, in the end, does nothing about it. You have to have the detention option, not only available, but it's time to do it now. Oh, this is not a successful outing just in imposing fines.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, 4 minutes left in this segment, Jim. The testimony from David Pecker, I thought, was interesting in a couple of regards. One, he lays out defending Donald Trump, the catch and kill, right? That's, we're going to get these stories. We're going to pay them to keep their mouths shut. Okay, fine. No big deal. But they also engaged in offense, in my opinion. They were running, intentionally defamatory stories, for instance, about Ted Cruz and his father and, the murder of JFK. What kind of liability should someone like David Pecker or the National Enquirer, when they put out, as they admitted to in court today, obviously phony, false, fake news stories, ironically, hypocritically, as Donald Trump claims to be about the rest of the media, participating in these fake news stories, specifically intentionally defaming his political opponents? Is there liability there in your mind, sir?
Sure. Certainly with respect to the journalism piece, and I say that advisedly, this is New York Times versus Sullivan, right? And we've seen in the Dominion case, other situations recently, where you can overcome this very high standard getting back at journalists and newspapers, media outlets who are doing this kind of thing. If there is a false statement knowingly done, again, with the intent there as well, it sure sounds as if you've got all the predicates for defamation. E. Jean Carroll knows that as well. And again, maybe difficult to wrap in Donald Trump civilly, but to the extent that there is a conspiracy to do just that, certainly David Pecker and the National Enquirer may well be, if they are not already, on the receiving end of that kind of attack. Again, we're seeing more and more that the New York Times Sullivan standards can be met and are being met in situations where you've got reckless and knowingly, purposefully wrong statements intended for the purpose of damaging and harming.
Jim Santel, that brings me to Wisconsin Elections Commissioner Administrator Megan Wolf, who has been targeted by Donald Trump by, I would perceive, many defamatory comments. She has been put personally at risk, hence the governor's efforts to secure her family and her safety. Jim, what do you think about her? I know she's something of a public figure, I would say on a low scale, but does she have a legitimate case? Should she be seeking legal counsel and suing is asked for defamation?
Right, and a minimum should be talking to an attorney, right, about what the rights are out there. To the extent, again, there are statements made about her that are knowingly and purposefully intended to harm in the public domain, knowing that they're false and they're untrue, and having that consequence of harm. That's the E. Jean Carroll situation again. That could also be the predicate for that kind of litigation. It all depends upon the specific facts. And again, we're always thoughtful about balancing that. She is a public figure and is also in the public domain. Some of this comes with the territory, but I would offer not this kind of thing, and certainly not the threats of an awful lot of public officials of physical harm, and even worse, are receiving these days. That's not a part of American tradition.
Last 30 seconds, Counselor. Trump seems diminished to me in his trial. Your thoughts, quickly, sir.
Absolutely. Again, even reporters who are there say that he seems not the aggressive person, certainly, that you see on the weekend stages at various states around the nation. This has got, when you're sitting there and listening to it day after day, you've got to have it's got to have an impact upon you. Absolutely.
Jim Santel, Trump coming to Waukesha next break, next Wednesday. We'll be there.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on Air.
DevilRadioSwag.com. You've asked for it for over a decade. We finally gotten off our dead and responded. devilradioswag.com. T-shirt and Dom's favorite slimming black, white, or gray. devilradioswag.com. Crew necks, hoodies, coffee mugs, exclusive merchandise of the greatest radio show ever, only at the devilradioswag.com, because we got bills too.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this civic media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous, unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of civic media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
Save big money on Menards' unbeatable selection of Atlas roofing products. Atlas shingles have the curb appeal you're looking for and the protection you deserve. Castlebrook, Briarwood, and Pinnacle shingles feature a limited lifetime warranty, up to 130 mile per hour wind warranty, and a super wide design for fast installation. Choose from 20 styles in stock, ready to take home today. And check out Menards.com for all of our hot deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in a quick podcast form? Search no more. Find it now at WGBW.FM. Your news just for the Green Bay area. I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, our last segment of the day. If you have something to say, hit us on the lines right now at 844-967. 2789.
Dominic, always appreciate what the very smart and astute Jim Santel comes around. You can hear Amicus, a law review, each Saturday morning, 9 to 11. And I could just envision people all around the great state of Wisconsin falling out of their cars in their driveways. They've been staying there, you know, they've been home for 20 minutes, but they're not going in the house, not while Jim's on. I did that earlier today. I'll give a little credit to the Brewers. I was not going to leave my car while the Brewers were still in that battle, and they did win today. So go Brewers. Go Jim Santel, and go audience. Listen to Jim Saturday mornings, but I suspect there are a few less people now. They're running in the house to desperately start dinner. 844-967-2789. Dom, during the Supreme Court oral arguments today, a question about a coup. What if the president ordered a coup? And I'm not sure that that was a hypothetical, but anyways.
No. Of all the hypotheticals they discussed today, that was not one of them.
I want to talk about Mark Esper, Trump's former defense secretary. Sarah K. Burris reporting Trump's defense secretary describes when he rejected then president's unlawful order. It's not a hypothetical. It's already happened. Donald Trump's former defense secretary, Mark Esper, rejects the idea of absolute immunity for a president, which was the argument before the Supreme Court today. But it certainly wasn't the first time he's broken with Trump. Speaking to CNN's Jake Tapper, Esper said he hates it when examples are brought up, such as the president ordering the military to stage a coup because he describes it as too outlandish. Trump's lawyer argues that if he ordered the military to stage a coup, it would be considered an official act. That's what Sauer said.
That's literally their position, yes.
It would be an official act and therefore completely
immune
from prosecution. Tapper agreed, saying that the concept addressed didn't seem all that hypothetical. Yeah, that's my point, Jake. In a Friends of the Court brief, a group of former military officials said, any military officers who knowingly issued or carried out such an unlawful order would themselves be criminally liable. And today at the U.S. Supreme Court, they talked about everybody below the president, no immunity. Everybody else has a standard of law they have to live by. But the arguments being made is that guy, that sole guy, lawless, whatever he wants to do.
So what? And I don't understand this. I heard Alito saying, well, the SEAL Team 6 example, well, the SEAL Team 6, they're honorable. They work under the whatever code. I'm thinking, well, you know, this is the commander in chief. They give the order. If the commander in chief gives the order and people follow through with it, he is not liable, but they are.
Well, Mark Esper gave a specific example. On January 20th, 2020 or so, President Trump made a statement that the United States will attack Iran's historical and cultural sites. And Esper says, I went on TV and said, no, we will not do that. We're going to follow the laws of land warfare. And I felt it important at the time to make a statement that not just the American public, but really to the United States military, our professional armed forces, that we will continue to follow the laws of land warfare and honor the obligations and legal obligations of our profession. It was less than a year later that Esper was fired via tweet by Trump for contradicting him. Pleased to announce that Christopher Miller, the highly respected director of National Counterterrorism Center, unanimously confirmed by the Senate, will be acting Secretary of Defense effective immediately. Chris will do a great job. Mark Esper has been terminated. I'd like to thank him for his service. You know what?
And when was that? You know, they have a date on there? My understanding, that was right before January 6th, man. They put in the civilian, Chris Miller. I mean, he was the guy that put out the memo about how, you know, the police and National Guard should interact with the Trump supporters. That guy? I mean, that was done specifically in furtherance of the coup, man. This is the point. These things are all, they're not all separate individual universal things. These are all part of the same story.
Yes, probably.
Yeah, probably.
What else did I have? What else did I see today? There was one other big issue. I'm looking for it again. Dom, you got any final thoughts for the day?
I do, specifically on this. The Kagan, Justice Elena Kagan versus Trump's attorney, talking about the president, you know, could not be charged unless he was first impeached, right? And she goes to the coup. All right, let's assume the president's gone, she says. Let's say the president who ordered the military to stage a coup, he's no longer the president. He wasn't impeached. He couldn't be impeached, but he ordered the military to stage a coup. You're saying that's an official act. The question was met with silence from Trump's normally fast-talking lawyer. That's immune, Kagan pressed. I would think it would depend on the circumstances whether it's an official act, Sauer said cautiously. If it were an official act, again, he would have to be impeached. What does it mean, depend on the circumstances, Kagan asked. He's a commander-in-chief. He talks to generals all the time. He told the generals, I don't feel like leaving office. I want to stage a coup. Is that immune? Sauer argued that there is a very low risk of a president staging a coup. If it's an official act, is it an official act? Kagan asked again. If it's an official act, it's impeachment, Sauer stated. Is it an official act, Kagan demanded. On the way you've described that hypothetical, it could well be. I just don't know.
Dom, I remember what my final thought for the day was. Contrary to everyone else in Trump's orbit, Trump left the courtroom today and had nothing but great things to say about the witness, David Pecker. And it makes you wonder, what's the National Enquirer still got in the vault about this guy? Because I've never seen that attitude. Thank you.
Oh, he's very, very nice to him. Very nice to the judge down in Florida. Wonder why those things are.
Thank you to our fine guest, former U.S. Attorney James Santel. Tune in Saturday morning's Amicus, a law review. Tomorrow, William Walter joins me on the big show. Dom, you're going to be here. It's Friday, right?
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home of Mino and the Mayor.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, stop by on a TGIF edition. That's thank goodness it's Friday. Our old friend Peter Rapine from EPOM's World stops by with a week in review. Wacky things humans do.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny.
I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say when it comes to teaching science to little kids.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
And there she is, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. Welcome to Busted Pencils. Nancy, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. It's great to see you. It's great to be here.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay,
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.